It's the third time you're late to work this week. What's your excuse this time?
Oh, well, gee, I'm sorry, boss. I just overslept, and you know the alarm went off, but I just seem to have drifted off.
Not a very effective excuse, and not likely to please the boss. Bill has to learn about creative excuse-making. Suppose Bill had said,
well, I was kept up the whole night by these bizarre shocks running through my body. And, well, I thought I was having a heart attack until this morning when I realized my big toe was stuck in the controls of my electric blanket. I had to call the super to get it out, and you know how supers are. It took him an hour to get there.
The boss may not like that excuse, but at least it's creative. How about this one?
On the way to the office, I spotted a $5 bill on the street. I bent down to pick it up, and my pants split wide open. I swear there was a crew from the David Letterman show who definitely got the whole thing on tape.
Those excuses are ridiculous. Who would believe them? I use realistic excuses like, I had to take my roommate to the emergency room last night after she swallowed a spoon. Or maybe an excuse like, they assured me delivery before 9 a.m., but I had to wait till 10 for my new Dolly Parton Jell-O mold.
Oh, realistic. You mean like my parakeet exploded? Or my true love actually had the nerve to send me a partridge in a pear tree. The damn bird has ruined my living room rug, and I had to wait for the trucking company to come to take the thing away.
Creative excuse making. Effective fact manipulation. Speaking with a forked tongue. Hogwashing, or whatever you want to call it, downright lying is the single most maligned and underdeveloped aspect of our personality. Used properly, an excuse allows you the freedom to increase your leisure time, command a higher salary, dump ugly dates, deal with shifty auto mechanics, or even with fluency in a foreign language, take control of a small country. The skillful excuse maker knows how to maximize personal gain without ever being considered cruel, cheap, or irresponsible. At this stage, somewhere in your subconscious, you may be resisting this line of reasoning. After all, an excuse is a lie, and lying is wrong. Please, don't be so naive. From the moment a child is born, parents and teachers unite to drum into a child's head what a terrible thing it is to tell a lie. His nose will grow. His tongue will freeze. Everyone will reject him, and worse, he'll be forced to pursue a career in local politics. Not only is this unfair to the child, who'll never learn how to prepare an effective resume, but it's also hypocritical. No one tells more lies than a mother. Learning the art of creative excuse making is very simple and, with a little practice, should come as natural as a seizure. That's why we've brought you this audio tape. Listen carefully. You will learn that there are excuses for absolutely, positively every cotton-picking occasion when a little story beats the hell out of telling the truth. Anyway, chances are you're not as honest as you think you are. Let's check out your HFQ. Oh, that stands for Honesty Factor Quotient. Score one for every yes answer.
Have you ever told a dear friend that her new hairdo looks great, even though it looks as if her head fell in a Cuisinart?
Have you ever told a child any of the following? A. The boogeyman will come get him if he doesn't go to bed. B. You'll turn the car around and return home if he doesn't stop chewing on his sister's hair. C. That you'll break his neck. D. That he'll go blind if he doesn't keep his hands out of a certain area. E. That his baby brother or sister came from a Sears catalog.
Have you ever returned a clothing item to a department store claiming it was defective, even though it was you who accidentally put it into the dishwasher?
Have you ever knowingly written a check without sufficient funds to cover it?
As a child, did you ever break an item in your parents' home and then do one of the following? Throw it out thinking your mother would forget she ever owned such a hideous thing?
Or put it back together hoping mom would think she broke it while dusting?
Have you ever told a friend that she hasn't gained an ounce, even though you originally thought she swallowed a Winnebago? Hello?
Have you ever made a phone call, and upon finding the party not home, have you called the operator and told her you reached a wrong number?
Now that you've taken the HFQ test, let's evaluate your score. If you answered yes once or twice, as honest as you believe yourself to be, you do have the tendency to blurt out a little excuse now and then. You probably donate money to the Society for Wayward Animals through your local television station, and are best suited to be a librarian or a mud analyst for a major chemical company.
I scored an HFQ, too. What does that mean?
You are inventive and possess a crude mastery of the language. You can get yourself out of a good number of situations, but not all. You've probably stolen a magazine out of a doctor's office.
Well, yes, but it was 2 months old.
What about me? I scored a 3.
You have a strong command in the art of excuse-making and really know how to get what you want out of life. You are best suited to be an entrepreneur, a leader of a fanatical religious cult, or a real estate broker. But the person who scored a 4 is a truly remarkable person. Cunning, clever, devious, he can get the best out of anyone at any game. He is best suited to be a theatrical agent, a public relations whiz kid, or a scheduler of furniture deliveries for a major department store. Think how he would handle this situation.
Oh, John, you can't leave me. Think what we've meant to each other, the times we've shared. Why are you leaving me?
Look, it will never work. It's totally impossible. You see, I just can't go to the bathroom when anybody else is in the house.
Or he might say,
I have decided to convert and become a Mormon. Not only will I give up premarital sex, but I plan to date other Mormons and maybe moving to Utah shortly.
Not believable? Well, how about this?
I've just found out that my great-aunt Louise is going to cut me out of her will if I continue to be seriously involved with anyone. What can I say? That woman hasn't been all there since she got her head caught in an escalator. But it's rumored that she's leaving me a $100,000 villa in France. Maybe we can get together after she dies.
Or, if the excuse maker is a female, she might say,
I just found out that in my previous life I was Queen Elizabeth and you were Sir Walter Raleigh. She didn't marry him, and I can't marry you.
You might think excuse-making is a modern gimmick, typical of our times. Not so. Excuse-making has a long and honorable history. Hundreds of billions of years ago, before there were countries, cities, corporations, or a department of motor vehicles, a universe was created. As with any major universe, the last few days were a bit slow. Man seemed content gathering roots and berries, breaking the monotony with an occasional hand wash at the river's edge.
Things take time,
our creator reasoned. After a few more days, the creator looked back down only to find his people not making the progress he imagined.
A bunch of lazy slobs,
he muttered.
And to think I had projected solid room deodorizers by the mid-1600s.
Confused and rejected, the creator put away the rough drafts for the first Twinkies, defeated in his attempts to figure out how to get the cream in the cake without leaving a trace, when it hit him. Communication. That's what he needed to build a great world. Faced with this problem of communication, the creator carefully considered several options. Bone cracking, hair positioning, and foot stomping. Immediately ruled out and reserved for mathematical questions posed to a horse. The creator needed something more flexible, yet cost efficient. And so he decided upon tone exchanging. Equipping each human with a voice box, and a voice modulating contouring device, later changed to tongue, when delicatessen owners complained they couldn't fit it on their takeout menu boards. Each person was now prepared to communicate his feelings. But his constant groaning, though suitable for government employees, soon proved to have significant limitations. So, the creator developed the letters of the alphabet, the merging of two or more letters into words, and the merging of 10 or more letters into medical terms. Armed with the necessary variable to create literally thousands of words, as well as developing a new concept for a breakfast cereal, the creator had given birth to vocabulary. The trouble was that by the time all this came to pass, the sixth day had slipped by. It was now Sunday, the universal day of rest, except for those who work in the major department stores, and the creator was forced to leave the responsibility of enforcing the rules of language to human beings. Left with the task of policing the vocabulary, men divided into two types, honest moral man and truth-distorting man, commonly referred to as advertising executives. From this point in history to the present, there has been a battle between the two, with honest moral men and women typically inventing stories about the evils of lying, and truth-distorting men and women generally living a happier, more fulfilling life. Look at the infinite possibilities.
What's the hurry, lady? Going to a fire? You must have been doing 70.
Oh, officer, my God, I was being tailed by a group of men, ugly, horrible-looking men with guns. They were purposely smashing into my car, trying to knock me off the road. I figured the only way I could save my life was to go as fast as possible and hope that a policeman would rescue me. Thank you so much, officer. As soon as they saw you, they got off the road. By the way, did you happen to notice the car that just got off at the last exit? I'd like to press charges.
Louise, what did you do to the car? The whole front is smashed in.
I was sitting at a red light, perfectly motionless, when this deranged woman started hacking at the car with an axe. Don't think I was getting out to stop her. The really scary part was that she looked a lot like your mother. By the way, where was she today?
Suppose he's an orphan. She might say...
I'm never getting in that car again. I was driving like a dream when all of a sudden the steering wheel fell off in my hand. Oh, thank God I wasn't going that fast and the Burger King drive-thru broke the impact.
In fact, a car is perhaps the single most important device for effective excuse-making. It can break down, stall, stammer, sputter, and cause you to be hours late and unable to call. Owning a car opens a world of highways, auto mechanics, and poorly attended garages as the prime blamee for your misfortune. Only with a car can you sit comfortably with a friend sipping a banana daiquiri, knowing that your wife will not rip your head off for shirking the responsibility of delivering cold cuts to her Tupperware party.
Well, I find a mother simply a must for excuse-making. No one can deny a child the right to run to his mother's aid when her luck is down. Illness, mental incompetence, and pathetic misfortune all work like a dream in any social or business situation when it happens to be a lovable mom. So put your mother in a faulty respirator and enjoy a life of doing whatever you like.
How about dead people? They're really an invaluable tool to both novice and professional excuse makers. Throughout this great nation, schools echo with students confiding to their professors that the sudden death of grandpa or grandma has prevented them from completing that 70-page term paper on the use of adverbs in prehistoric Zimbabwe. When a person close to you dies, be sure not to tell a soul and save this tragic news for when it really counts.
And don't forget amnesia, an incredible, effortless, and easy tool. Amnesia is a down-and-dirty way to get out of absolutely anything. The beauty of amnesia is that you can always have a relapse and forget something new. No one can deny the amnesia patient every right to completely erase his responsibilities, and any person relying on this person should be cautioned well in advance of any potential problems. That is, of course, if you can remember to tell them.
The best tool for effective excuse-making is illness. This is a real building block of excuse-making and requires very little setup. Illness can strike anywhere, at any time, and any way you like. From flu to bunions to rare skin diseases, a phony illness can provide for extended vacations, days in the park, or brunch in an afternoon matinee. Don't overdo it, though. With too many bizarre illnesses, people will be afraid to hang around you. And what's the point of a day off if you have no one to play with?
Illness is not really too imaginative. I can think of a lot better excuses for missing a day of work, like these.
During my shower this morning, I accidentally used my wife's depilatory cream. What did I know? It looked like shampoo. Anyway, now I'm completely bald and not going anywhere until my wig is ready.
Remember when I went to that hypnotist to stop smoking? Well, he must have made a mistake because I was walking out the door feeling great when suddenly the next thing I knew I was in the hospital. The doctors told me it took 3 men to remove me from the frozen food section of a supermarket where I was telling people I was Mama Celeste and forcing them to buy my pieces for one.
While I was on the train, I accidentally slammed my briefcase into a dwarf. I apologized, but apparently it wasn't enough because he started biting my knee. It was like having a pit bull strapped to my leg. Don't let those little guys fool you. They pack quite a punch.
By now, you should have some idea of the wide range of excuses one can choose from. For example, avoiding a date by saying you developed a boil on your lip is clearly different from shooting your ex-husband and claiming you were just cleaning the gun. Situation, magnitude, and possible mental illness are all factors in determining the type of excuse you'll use. Experts in the field of creative excuse-making, all of whom used to be cable television service representatives, have broken down excuses into the following categories.
The flash, a panic-induced excuse. The flash is a common response when a person's story is challenged and he has no time to get his story straight. It often begins with, I, and then degenerates into something wildly stupid, very embarrassing and highly improbable. I fell asleep in the car, was one man's flash when his wife asked him why he went off to the supermarket at 7:30 p.m. and didn't return until the following Thursday at noon. Fortunately, this man was lucky. His wife was stupid enough to believe him, though she did eventually leave him to become a hostess on Wheel of Fortune.
The twist, one of the most common forms of excuse-making. The twist is simply a variation of the truth. A person who twists changes just one element of the story to give the impression of a completely different situation.
I'm late because I ran out of gas on the highway.
Just doesn't sound as good as its twisted version.
I'm late because my car exploded. The slip. Common in urban areas where people tend to talk very quickly, the slip is the insertion of some very crucial point in the middle of a very long-winded sentence, hoping that the listener will not notice.
Oh, I had a marvelous day. Picked up some of those delicious apples you love, met Aunt Harrietta for lunch, and completely demolished your car. And, oh, I was wondering, do you want to see a show tonight?
This is just one example of how important information can be slipped to an unsuspecting patsy.
The who, me? Another favorite. The who, me, is used in situations where a person was supposed to do something but didn't. The idea is to pretend you honestly thought someone else was going to handle the situation. Also included in this category is the you never told me to do that. And the, I thought you were going to do it, both of which seem to be very popular among employees of banks and Blue Cross Blue Shield.
The pass the buck. This type of excuse involves passing all blame and responsibility to an unsuspecting third party. At this time, you must either, one, convince this other person that you did, in fact, tell him to take care of the matter. Or, two, hope that he gets hit by a stray racquetball and is permanently convinced he's Uncle Joe from Petticoat Junction.